Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk. It is Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance, Canucks insider, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's up, Drance?
What's up?
What's up? I said it again.
I know.
Twice.
I got excited about it this time. Well, up from Abbotsford, Arthur Seeloffs. But we'll get into that.
We will get into it.
Seeing Dune 2 tomorrow.
Ooh.
Yep.
First time?
Do you have a noose around your neck in the Old West or something? Yeah, no. First time. I'm very excited to see my lifestyle depicted on screen in the personage of
vaping.
Of Baron Vlad Harkonnen.
Finally, evil vapors get represented on screen.
Murderous tubby guys who like to sleep in black goo. I've been waiting for my moment.
If you can see it, you can be it.
Well, I've been it for a while. I've just never seen Hollywood reflect my lifestyle to me. I'm very excited.
Well, that's very exciting.
It's going to mean a lot to me.
I thought it was good. I actually liked the first one more, I will say. But I don't want to influence your...
That's because endings are hard.
Yeah.
You know, like the first hour of every movie, I'm always like, yeah, yeah. And then at the end, I'm like, they didn't land that at all. You know?
Well, and this one is just the landing of the first one. So, I mean, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to set you up to be disappointed.
What, of the 40-year-old IP that is the Dune saga? You don't want to spoil that
1968
classic?
No, I'm not saying spoil it. I'm just saying I don't want to like, plant the seed in your head that you're not going to enjoy it going in.
Oh, I'm
going to
enjoy it anyway.
Yeah, I still enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, and I'm sure it'll set up the third one.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right, let's get right into it. It is time for the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
Your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 12th. Headlines. First of all, we'll get into the Arthur Seeloffs side of things here, but the Canucks are on the ice right now, practicing at Rogers Arena for the first time. First time taking the ice as a team since that win over Winnipeg when Thatcher Demko was injured on Saturday. So we'll have updates from practice. We'll see what we hear on Thatcher Demko, but just generally as well from Rick Tocchet here as he speaks to the Canucks media for the first time since postgame on Saturday as well. So that's part of the story here. Of course, they're prepping for the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow at Rogers Arena. But as you mentioned, the true headline today is Arthur Seeloffs called up by the team. There were some other roster moves and roster considerations that we can get into in the lineup notes section of the broadsheet. Not a big surprise that it was Seeloffs, although I know people will say that who are paying attention and know more about goalies that Tolopilo is having a stronger campaign.
I think a more consistent
for
campaign.
Abbotsford. Yeah, but as we discussed,
like Seeloffs has had higher highs. It's just that Seeloffs has also had way lower lows, and then at the end they kind of get to the exact same place in terms of performance. But I think Seeloffs has been a bit maddening this year. You've had just great runs and really tough ones. And but anyway, he's got NHL experience.
Yeah,
Tolopilo doesn't.
That's what Kevin Woodley said on our show yesterday, right? Like, this guy came up last year, played games for them.
Played well.
We know that, you know, he's been in the organization for a lot longer than Tolopilo has. He's had a lot more time to work with Ian Clark. We know Ian Clark has traditionally regarded him really, really highly, right? Being instrumental in getting him drafted. So ultimately not a surprise that Seeloffs is the guy who gets the call here.
Seeloffs has also been thrown into the fire at the World Championships. You know what I mean? Like, he's actually played in high-stress professional games. This is something that looms large in the Canucks' imagination. You know, as well as Vasily Podkolzin's played, for example. And from what I understand, by the way, like, he's become a real favorite of Rick Tocchet's. I think we can see that a little bit in the deployment, but, like, I think there's a lot of regard among the coaching staff for what Podkolzin's done across his sort of one-week cup of coffee. And yet, you know, once Dakota Joshua's back, once you get into the playoffs, Game seven against Vegas, whatever, whomever. DiGiuseppe or Podkolzin is the decision facing you on the whiteboard. Like, one thing that's going to loom large in this club's thinking is, if we put Podkolzin out there, a player who's struggled with confidence occasionally, right? And he has one bad moment.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change the trajectory of how we can count on
of
him
his career
next year? Yeah.
Yeah.
Of his public perception in this market. I mean, think about people listening to the show. Do you know exactly what moment I'm talking about when I say Nathan Lafayette?
Yes, of course.
Do you know exactly what moment I'm talking about when I say Tanner Glass?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's a lot of players that get defined by their moments. These small moments. And it's one thing if it's Willie Mitchell's turnover to Marian Hossa, it was Martin Havlat. It's another if it's, you know, a really young guy sort of trying to make his mark who we know to be a thinker. So I'd imagine for them, Seelovs, having been through sort of forged in the fire of the home world championships in Latvia where he became a national hero, it's like, I don't, you know, you got to feel pretty confident that he's unflappable. Tolopilos just not been similarly tested to this point in his young hockey career, as good a season as he's having. And I guarantee you that that's a consideration, too.
Yeah, so ultimately not a big surprise. Now, I guess the other conversation is, does Artur Seelovs get a game in here, right?
Yes.
Because we'll see how long Thatcher Demko is out, ultimately. You know, we're still hearing that kind of 2-3-4-week timeline. I know Jeff Patterson on Twitter pointed out, as recently as last year, Casey DeSmith had a run of, I think, 8 starts in a row for Pittsburgh. So it's not as if it's unheard of for him. And with the schedule playing out the way that it does with so much rest, it wouldn't be a particularly big burden. Having said that, it feels like he probably does get a spot in here. Now, especially if it drags on to 4 weeks, because then you get a back-to-back in there. But I guess the immediate question is kind of on the remainder of this homestand. Do they feel the need to give DeSmith a rest and get Seelovs a game at some point?
Yeah, I don't even think it's necessarily because of rest. Like, this Demko injury, I think, does add a layer of significant uncertainty into Vancouver's sort of goaltending strength as a whole, right? Like, I think that's the important way to look at it here. You know, could DeSmith get a run of games here exclusive to Artur Seelovs? Like, I say yes, that could totally happen. Could Seelovs get a run of games because DeSmith struggles, right? I mean, there's all sorts of different outcomes here, right? Like, could this be a good thing because Demko gets to rest up ahead 100%. Of the playoffs? Could it be a tough thing because he comes back and there's niggling performance impacts?
Could it end up, like, boosting Seelovs' confidence after an uneven year, right? If he does get in and have a couple of good games or one or two good games here.
Given your perch atop the standings, do you actually want to see that? Because if Seelovs can be your backup next year, that actually saves you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And if Seelovs can be your backup next year and be good,
that's huge,
right? Like, and he's been good before, right? Like, he was good in those 7 games. 908 save percentage. He was really good.
I don't want to read the minds of Canucks management, but just looking at the arc of his career, of Seelovs' career and Thatcher Demko's contractual situation, I think in an ideal world, he crushes it in the AHL this year, and then he is your backup next year, right? And then you start increasing his workload from there.
Or at least maybe you find a guy, you know, 1.15 or 1.5, like a variable amount in the American League, and it's like open competition, boys.
Right.
You know, maybe you find one of those fringy, sort of like the 58th best goalie in the world.
Yeah.
And test him against Artur Seelovs in training camp. Like, maybe it might not even be that you win the job down the stretch, but you win a chance at a chance, right? So, again, the Demko injury, I think, has just thrown a ton of uncertainty into what's been one of the Canucks' most certain positions. We don't know a lot, right? The club's not going to tell us a lot today. And even if they did, even if they come out and say knee sprain, right? It's like, that can be a 4-6 week injury.
Yep.
You know, like, that can be a 2-3 week injury, right? This could be one of those situations where they say week to week and it's not just window dressing.
Right. It's truly, like, we'll see.
But it's like, hey, you know, a week from now, like, take a week to chill, and a week from now we'll do another battery of testing to see where you're at. And you know, hopefully from that point, you're a week away from stepping back on the ice. Or not, you know, like, we just don't know. The human body, especially for in a demanding position with a super athletic style of goaltender, you know, just I think the most important, like, analytical assumption we should make in discussing Canucks goaltending over the next month, basically, is just going to be to retain a sense of skepticism and uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And hope like hell for the fans of this team that Thatcher Demko gets back at 100%.
Yeah.
By the time the really important games start, because, man, he's deserved it based off his form to this point in the campaign.
This text comes in. Does Demko's timeline go more towards the 4 weeks if the team is winning? I mean, I don't. The value of having a fully recovered and healthy Thatcher Demko going into the playoffs is so much greater than basically anything that can happen in the standings. Mm-hmm. Yes, you want to win your division. Yes, you would love to win the conference and get that second wild card matchup. Although, as we'll get into later in the playoff forecast, I mean, even that is looking like it's not necessarily super clear who the more favorable of the two wild card teams will be. But you would so much rather drop down behind Edmonton in the division, but have fully healthy, not rushed back Thatcher Demko, then rush him back in order to win the Pacific Division. So, yeah, winning will make it easier to be really, really patient with Thatcher Demko, but there's no scenario, there's nothing that can happen in the standings with where they are, the cushion they've built them, that would justify rushing him back. Because the most important thing, really the thing that matters, is getting him as healthy and good to go as possible for game one of the playoffs.
Game one of the playoffs, everything can we can turn our focus there. You know, are there some minimal risks of the Edmonton Oilers catching you in the Pacific, like remote,
yep,
but yes. Are there some minimal risks of, you know, not finishing first in the West? Like that's very real, right? That at this point,
oh yeah, that's a dogfight. Right,
that's a dogfight, straight
yeah
up. And so now that said, and we talked about this, the Canucks, when we talk about teams that are really good structurally, really good defensive teams, really good five-on-five teams that control play, and people point to their goaltending weakness, what's my standard issue response? You don't know. Mm. You don't know. It doesn't. It might not even matter. If this Canucks team keeps defending like this, I'm not saying that they're going to not miss Demko. They will, right? But if they're defending like this, Demko becomes that Vasilevsky layer where it's like, in addition to how
right
well they're playing, it's also unfair that they have this guy in the back, as opposed to, you know, where this team's been as recently as like October, November, where it was like they're really dependent on their goaltender outclassing the guy at the other end of the rink to win games. This is that is not the Canucks team we've seen for the last 2.5 months, right? This is a Canucks team that I think can withstand, you know, at least to a credible level, you know, Demko's absence for a bit, even if they're not going to be at like full power, right? Without him, obviously.
Yeah. And
he's real good.
Now, it's a bit of a tough start to holding up without Thatcher Demko tomorrow against Nathan MacKinnon and the Colorado Avalanche. Gets a little bit easier for the next stretch after that. But as you said, this
back-to-back,
is...
Back-to-back, though.
That's true. Yeah, they're
back-to-back
playing in Calgary
and
tonight.
No more elevation advantage for the...
That's right.
Like, at both times these teams have played, they've been at elevation.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
So certain no,
pulling, you know, the old sea to sky thing, pulling the mountain men down to sea level. Let's see how you do.
Certainly not insurmountable, but yeah, tough test
insurmountable
tomorrow.
Insurmountable, huh?
Yes.
Nice.
There you go.
Nicely done.
Thematically appropriate. tough test, nonetheless, anytime Nathan MacKinnon and company are coming to town. All right, those are your headlines for today. Quick note here in the broadsheet. I'm going to stretch now, because we're post-trade deadline season. So, you know, we're going to have to do it. We've got our work cut out for us filling up the broadsheet on a day-to-day basis. But, of course, as I often do, listening to our pals Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV earlier today. Now, they were having a bit of a larger discussion around Filip Hronek, what number he might come in at. But Rick Dolly, talking about what the future holds for the Canucks' blue line, noting again that the Canucks will definitely, in his words, take a run at re-signing Tyler Myers, and even notes that he thinks they would prioritize him over Nikita Zadorov, who's also a pending unrestricted free agent. Also notes, however, that, you know, the terms would have to be very reasonable for the Canucks to end up signing Tyler Myers. But having said that, I think it's you have a much better chance at getting Tyler Myers to short term, obviously because of his age, than Nikita Zadorov short term.
But you're going to have to give something.
You're gonna have to. It's not going to be like the $1 million or anything like that.
No.
You know what I mean? It could be like 2 years at $4 million AAV, something like that.
That sounds good.
And that's a pay cut, right? And I don't think that.
So 3.325 is the Eric Johnson number, but, you know, that was the number that I was using. That's the number.
So 2 years, 3.5,
no,
maybe?
No, no, that's the number I was using early in the season when Myers was, like, struggling, you know what I mean? Now Tyler Myers has put together a season where, you know, on a per 82-game basis, he would have been at, what, 38? Like, he had a chance at hitting 40 points.
Yes.
I guess not. But 30 for sure, right? He definitely had a chance at hitting 30-plus points. And You know, that's a totally different thing. Like, Eric Johnson earned $3.25 million coming off an eight-point season.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then there's the ice time log, the fact that he's still third in the team, right? All the hits, the penalty kill usage, you know, the size, the right-handed thing. So many things in this guy's favor. Yet four times two, that sounds good. I actually wonder, with a player like Myers, are you almost better off extending the term and managing the cap hit if he wants to be here?
I don't know, though. At his age, the term starts to get pretty nerve-wracking. Like, I would almost go the other way, where I'd rather pay a little bit more, I think, on the AAV in order to keep the term down, right? Yeah. And not have that risk on the back end of the deal.
It's a tough decision. But in any event, Myers makes his summer home in the province, loves it here. Family's extremely settled. He's a family man. Good pro. Very well liked by his teammates around the league. Like, this is a look. He's a really good pro.
Yeah.
He's a really good pro, and he's having a really good season at a premium position with some attributes that are just about impossible to find. So.
Now, I will also say the salary. I mean, it has to fit the role, which I think we can all agree at this point. Ideally, would be third pairing. Right? On your third pairing.
Except he literally has never at any point been there.
I know.
Right? Like, this is...
He always ends up playing more.
Not just... And you know, even if you think 4-5, so that, like, second, third
right,
pair
right.
hybrid, this guy has been
typically 3-4, yeah.
No, 3, period.
Yeah.
Every year. He's third in ice time. 5-on-5. Like, every year, like clockwork. They cannot push Myers down the depth chart, hard as they might try. And at some point, you got to respect that. You know, like, at some point, you got to... Tyler Myers is a second-pair defenseman by usage and has been every single year of his five-year contract in Vancouver.
Nate from Comox Texan, I remember a show last year where you guys made a joke about Myers having a great contract year and the Canucks playing well, and then the Canucks extend him, and here we are. He says, however, I don't think fans will react the same way as we would have last year after seeing the new structure of the team. It is funny, how many when-are-they-going-to-trade-Myers discussions did we have coming into the summer, right? As soon as that bonus is paid, he's going to be gone. At the deadline, they're definitely going to trade him. And now the trade deadline's passed. Far more likely that he's back.
I'm all for the, like, navel-gazing self-awareness. But as often as we discussed it less than the Canucks front office.
I'm not saying we were wrong to discuss the prospect of trading Tyler Myers.
I'm just saying, like, make no mistake, the Myers thing, the Myers conversation... it's not like it was divorced from the reality.
No. That's what I was saying. I'm just saying it's incredible that it's trending in this direction after feeling like it was going the other way for so long.
You put a more structured environment around Myers and fundamentally, I think it's important to remember that there are guys who aren't going to, like, make the environment, you know? And I just think Myers at this stage of his career... He's not a guy who's going to make the environment. So if the environment is better around him, he can contribute helpfully to winning within that. I think I've always been pretty consistent in assessing his game under that rubric. We'll see where it goes. I think this is a player who will be motivated to stay, and you can understand why the Canucks would be motivated to keep him.
Lineup notes. So as mentioned, the Canucks are at practice at Rogers Arena. No lineup changes. No surprise there, right? Team's on a roll. Just played a fantastic game against Winnipeg. So no changes to any of the forward pairs or the defense or forward lines or the defense pairing.
Just the Seelovs up on emergency conditions.
Yep. So the emergency conditions there means, you know, you have the limited number of post-deadline recalls from Abbotsford.
And they already used one.
Doesn't count. Yeah, they used one, bringing Vasily Podkolzin back up. So we're down to three. This does not count against one of those because it's emergency conditions.
Yes, which are established. Like, with goalies, it's actually relatively easy to get them on the roster because the moment you hit, only two active goaltenders, emergency conditions are triggered. They were in this instance. And then Dakota Joshua placed on
LTI.
Because remember, you
and
have...
And that's retroactive, so he can still come off at basically any time.
Yeah, and he's already missed 24-plus days. So this has literally no impact aside from the fact that the Canucks need to exceed the salary cap to get Seelovs onto the roster. I didn't see... At least the club didn't announce it. And last I checked the roster, although I'll see if it's been updated, I didn't see that Demko had been placed on IR or anything.
So,
and in fact, I can tell you that as of noon, he has not been. So as of 21 minutes ago, he remains on the active roster. That's telling in and of itself. Obviously, you commit to losing a guy for 7 days once they hit IR. I would assume that Demko will hit IR at some point.
Yeah.
But of course, the club doesn't need the roster spot given that the 23-man limit is lifted after the deadline.
Right.
They just need the cap
space.
So
they're at 24 people on the roster right now, but as you said, it's post-deadline, so
exactly.
They're able to run with 24 for the time being, just needed the cap space from putting Dakota Joshua on LTIR. So don't worry about Dakota Joshua setback or anything like that. Just an accounting move for the Canucks.
Yeah.
Playoff forecast here, nothing really to update in the Pacific Division race. I know LA won last night, but I mean, they're so far down. The Pacific Division odds per Dom Lucision's model doesn't really change anything. But I did want to just note, kind of quietly here, Nashville has passed Vegas in the wild card standings in points and in your favorite metric, points percentage. They're 8-0-2 in their last 10. Vegas 3-6-1 in that stretch. And I mean, we've all been operating under the consensus of you got to get first place in the Western Conference to avoid Vegas. Make sure you get Nashville or if any of those other teams can really get hot and steal that spot. The way Nashville is playing with Vegas's injury situation, and yeah, I know they've made some additions, they'll get Hurdle back, but their underlying form all year, it's a very, very real possibility that Nashville finishes ahead of Vegas in the first wildcard spot, and that means Nashville could end up crossing over to the Pacific. Vegas could end up going over to the Central. So all of a sudden, it's really up in the air, like which the most advantageous position in the West is.
I hate the playoff format.
It's not good.
It's so bad. Like,
it's not
good. Why would they cross over the Pacific? That makes no sense. That's all of it. Just wild. Have you looked to, like, if you look at and see how it would look in an old school 1-8?
No, like, I haven't this year, but often I have.
I know. The old school 1-8, though, right now, like, right now, these would be the active matchups. Vancouver, Vegas, Dallas, LA. Oh, no, sorry. That's by total points. Let's go by point percentage. Winnipeg, Nashville, Dallas, LA, Colorado, Edmonton, first round.
Nah, that'd be awesome.
Like, that's what we all want.
Yeah.
All of us want that. And, like, all of us would love to see Colorado be like, oh, man, we better win down the stretch here. How much would their motivation change, right? Anyway, it's too bad. It's too bad we don't have that.
It's a weird one. Any update on the gambling odds for us?
Not really. I did want to spotlight Dom Lucision wrote a thing that's really good at The Athletic that I want to send everyone to on where teams stand, the pecking order in the NHL, ranking where NHL teams stand in the Stanley Cup race after the trade deadline. Okay. And the Canucks, according to his model, remain sort of what he calls a dark horse, like under 4% chance of winning the Stanley Cup. He notes that his model has been a little bit skeptical of the Canucks this year,
mm-hmm.
and then says that skepticism has lessened throughout the year as the Canucks have not only sustained some of their PDO magic, but have also controlled play much more. If they can finish the season strong, their projected strength will grow. He then sort of goes through some of the attributes of the team, and he says the Canucks can go deep on the strength of their stars, especially if their depth pieces continue to play above their pay grades. It's just not as likely in a tough West where several other teams stack up better. The Canucks grade out as the league's eighth or ninth best team, but that's only good for sixth in the West. If you go look at their Stanley Cup odds, to tie this back to the gambling odds, right? They have the same odds as the Jets, behind the Stars, the Golden Knights, the Avalanche, the Oilers, right? So again, Vegas has them in a tie for fifth, Dom would say sixth, in the West. I think this is a really important big picture question, right? Which is, we know how things have lined up for the Canucks with the Pettersson raise kicking in after this season, which is, by the way, a much better situation than the Pettersson uncertainty,
yep.
which we used to have to caption it with the growth of the OEL buyout, with the age of some of their key players, with the Hronek extension situation looming. Even news that Meyer's $6 million expiring isn't necessarily going to be netted in its entirety, right? There are tough decisions. There's a ton of quality expiring players who have played huge roles for this team, and the club has stacked up a ton of future assets into this season. Not that it's going to diminish the fun of what comes next for Canucks fans, but I do think it's worth at least bringing up and asking the question, like, if you're spending all those assets, if you're pushing so much of your wealth into this campaign, and you enter the playoffs as the sixth best team in your own conference and eighth or ninth in the league, like, is that where you want to be? Is that a good enough shot for what's been spent to bring the club to this point?
I still say yes, just because I feel like they're better than the sixth best team in the typically West in the West, in a conference typically is.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like the West is just really, really good this year. So I we can get back into this conversation because we got to take a break here. But to me, the answer is yes, because for me, I'm looking at it. Do they have legitimate hopes of going on a deep run? And I say the answer is yes.
Let's ask our next guest,
Jeff Merrick.
I think you're right, but yeah. I think it's a compelling discussion.
It's an interesting conversation for sure. Jeff Merrick coming up next year on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.